This episode is sponsored by InMobi. Did you know the average American is on their phone for 4.5 hours daily? That's a huge opportunity for you to reach your target audience. InMobi drives real connections between you and your customer on mobile. They've been doing it since 2007, before the smartphone even existed. Their premium direct supply at scale can help you reach the right audience at the right time with unique, high-impact creative options like full-screen video and rich media. You can find out how InMobi gives you more at InMobi.com.
But they've lost a lot of other things like that, which then means they have to acquire new content, which is very expensive. So that just really eats into, you can grow all you want, but if your costs keep on going up dramatically, then obviously it becomes a less tenable position to be in as a major streaming company.
Hey gang, it's Tuesday, May 2nd. Jeremy and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by InMobi. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by our Senior Director of Everything Briefings based out of New York. It's Jeremy Goldman.
Happy May. How are you doing?
Hello. Good, sir. How are you?
8 out of 10.
Not bad.
That's pretty good, right?
That's pretty good. Yeah. Any higher, you should be suspicious. Any lower, you should be concerned. Today's fact. Only 3 sports professionals, Jeremy, across the major US sports have had their jersey retired league-wide, not just for their team. Who are they?
Michael Jordan.
Nope.
Oh, what? Wayne Gretzky.
Yep. Wayne Gretzky's number 99 jersey in hockey.
Bill Russell.
Very nice. Bill Russell passed away last summer at 88, won 11 championships with the Boston Celtics. He had the number 6 jersey, retired across the NBA, which I thought was interesting because I thought, well, LeBron James still wears 6. So I was like, why is that the case? Players who sported the number pre-jersey retirement. So people like the Lakers' LeBron James, the Bulls' Alex Caruso, the Wizards' Kristaps Porzingis and others, they're allowed to continue wearing it, but no more will be issued.
I feel like I know who the last one was.
Mm-hmm. Go.
Lou Gehrig.
No, that was apparently the first person in baseball to have their jersey retired.
That's why I guess it, yeah.
But it's not league-wide. Last one is Jackie Robinson.
Oh, God, now I feel bad.
I know. It's so, because they have the day for it as well. It's like the only one where it's kind of like very much kind of present during the season. The others is harder to notice. But yeah, Jackie Robinson, 2 out of 3 though, not bad. Not bad at all. Jackie Robinson, Bill Russell and Wayne Gretzky, the only 3 folks across the major sports to have their jerseys retired league-wide. Today's real topic, how Netflix has started the year. In today's episode, first, we'll look at how Netflix is getting on. Then for another news, we'll discuss Meta, TikTok and YouTube at the new fronts and the promise of instant AI-generated videos. Jeremy, we start with the lead. We're talking Netflix. So Netflix added just over 2 million subscribers, just over 2 million, 1.75, between January and March of this year. The third consecutive quarter of positive growth, after Q1 and Q2 of last year saw their total subscriber numbers fall. Their worldwide total is now 232 million subscribers. But Jeremy, what do you make of the just over 2 million new subscribers added in Q1?
So this is a perfect case of, you know, why we are kind of long-term analysts here and looking at the overall health of companies instead of necessarily thinking about this from like a financial, you know, Wall Street perspective, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Netflix did okay enough if you're going to just look at the game of low expectations, which is they actually gained some subscribers. But there's actually a lot of signs of weakness in their overall business. There are a few hurdles that they've had to deal with in the last few months, which I'm sure we're going to get into. Mm-hmm. And I think overall, one of the key takeaways is that global streaming paid memberships, you know, rose 4.9%. You know, that's higher than Q4's growth. But if you look over the next few years, there's going to be a lot of signups overseas and a lot of kind of weakness or stagnation within the important North American market.
Yeah. Speaking about that stagnation and also your concept of low expectations, there is kind of a new normal now, isn't it, with Netflix? We're so used to such meteoric growth that we've forgotten the last couple of years just hasn't been that for Netflix. Early pandemic it was, now not so much. So worldwide, year-on-year subscriber growth was 5%, and it's been in the single digits every quarter for the last 2 years. So that is definitely a new normal. And then you talked about the all-important North American market, US and Canada adding about 100,000 new subscribers to reach 74.4 million. But all told, the US and Canada subscriber number has been stuck at 74 million, that 74 million since the end of 2020. So those aren't going anywhere, haven't gone anywhere in a while, at least not the US and Canada. We expect, Jeremy, Netflix to lose about a million viewers, not subscribers, viewers, how many people are watching Netflix, not subscribed to it, this year. We expect them to lose about 1 million this year, but then add 3 million next year. And one of the explanations I saw you writing about for this was that you think the decline is attributed to the rollout of paid account sharing. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think paid account sharing is really interesting because you basically say, okay, we know that people are sharing their passwords. Netflix essentially came out with that about a year ago and said, we've got a plan. They started rolling that out overseas. And ultimately, you know, yes, you can be an add-on to an account. You can have a shared account, but you've got to pay more for that. And if you're a casual viewer, you're going to say, no, no, thanks. I'm good. I've got enough content to binge between every other service, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's going to cause a number of people to downgrade or cancel their plans. And I think it's also interesting to say that, you know, Netflix has been pretty positive about the idea of this paid sharing. And they're saying that that's going to improve their average revenue per member. So maybe that improves its overall, you know, financial health. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the company said that in Canada, its paid membership rose with the launch of paid sharing.
Right.
But they declined to put an exact number on when paid sharing is going to launch in the US. So that kind of, to me, that looks like we've still got a few things to iron out if you're mm-hmm. a Netflix.
Yeah. So just under 2 million new subscribers added in Q1. Worth noting, this is Netflix's first quarter with Ted Sarandos and Greg Peters serving as the co-CEOs. Co-founder and previous co-CEO Reed Hastings is now the executive chairman, moved to that position in January. Let's move to the ad-supported tier, Jeremy. It was much anticipated. Netflix, obviously, the short history being said, never, we'll never do ads. And then last year said, actually, no, we will. And then kind of rushed to get them set up for the end of the year, a similar time to Disney Plus. But they've not got off to the best of starts. Why isn't the ad-supported tier helping much?
Oh, I mean, there's a few different reasons. I mean, first off, we can be fair to it and say that it's relatively new, right? So I think that's definitely one factor. I think another key thing is, as you pointed out, Netflix really kind of got caught, one might argue, flat-footed last year when they said, okay, we're going to launch ads. Because then the question is, if you have not built your company in the direction of ever serving an ad to anybody, you've got to leverage partners, right? So then they built this partnership with Microsoft, which seems to have gone, I guess, okay, given the fact that they launched it so incredibly quickly. Mm-hmm. But then now reportedly they're looking to see, you know, they're not going to maybe renew this contract. They're going to build out their own capabilities. And part of it is that advertisers have complained about thin ad targeting capabilities to start off, right? So you're not getting that much ad revenue if people are paying a lot on a basically CPM basis to mm-hmm. reach their audiences. But if some advertisers say, I'm going to wait until you build out your tech stack a little bit further, mm-hmm. obviously that's going to be one issue.
Yeah. Well, something they're working on, right? So Daniel Konstantinovich, who works on the briefings with you, noting Netflix is teasing new ad capabilities, the ability to target ads to users based on content they're watching. So anime, comedy, things like that. And then Netflix soon letting advertisers buy inventory per its top 10 list. So far, as you know, because they rushed to get this done, Netflix only offering basic targeting, age, gender, location.
So the other thing I would add, you know, we just talked about the ad targeting capabilities, but the other key thing is the user experience, you know, so 49% of Netflix's basic with ad subscribers describe the service's ad load as heavy and 17% deem it excessive, according to Illuma Research. I just think things like that are very important to pay attention to, because ultimately, if you have people who are, you know, promoters of that particular experience, then you're probably going to be able to pick up new subscribers to the ad tier. And if people say, I don't know, maybe you want to sign on to Peacock because they've got a better ad load and they've got decent content, you know, this is the kind of thing that people do actually care about. So It makes it a little bit harder to build an ad business when you're charging a lot for it. And then people say, you know, they're seeing too many ads.
Yeah. It might be one of the reasons few subscribers have switched from the ad-free to the cheaper ad-supported. And Tenet estimating ad-supported tier, which launched in November, accounted for less than 2% of US subscribers in March. That's up from less than 1% in December. Netflix doesn't have numbers, doesn't disclose numbers for its ad-supported service, so relying on other sources for that, folks like Antenna. But Netflix did say the new ad plan makes more money per user than the $15.50 per month standard plan. So they're making some good money on this. They just need to get more people over to the ad plan. Jeremy, let's look at the dollars for a second. Quarterly revenue crossed the $8 billion mark for the first time, Q1. Up 4% year on year. What's your take on the company's financial health?
I think that it's doing okay in that regard. I think that I don't even necessarily look at that 4%. Sure, you know, that's impressive. That's growth. But I think that another thing that people need to pay attention to here are the content costs, you know, because the cost of acquisition, the cost of originals just keeps on going up. There's been a lot of concern around that. You see some other platforms that have had to raise their prices, like HBO Max did a month or two ago, specifically because of content costs. And then the other key thing is that it's more expensive to even find these things that you want to acquire if you're Netflix. You know, like they've tapped out a lot of the international stuff that they want to buy. And another interesting thing is that they're losing a lot of things that kind of essentially syndication or rerun like hits like NCIS. They still have that, but they've lost a lot of other things like that, which then means they have to acquire new content, which is very expensive. So that just really eats into, you can grow all you want, but if your costs keep on going up dramatically, then obviously it becomes a less tenable position to be in as a major streaming company.
Yeah. Zooming out, revenue growth for 2020 was 6%. That's down from 19% the year before. Netflix saying the benefits from their crackdown on password sharing are likely to materialize in Q3 rather than Q2. So maybe there's a potential boost there. We'll see. Jeremy, another announcement that was made during these earnings was the DVD by mail business going away. So Netflix saying that they're going to be winding down its DVD by mail business the company started with this September. Most people are probably thinking, that's still a thing? Yes. Yes, it is. What are your thoughts on Netflix finally sunsetting its physical DVD business?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just an interesting marker in time. You know, obviously it represents the fact that the DVDs and the whole entire Netflix model, you know, in a lot of ways, it helped send Blockbuster out of business over time. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an interesting thing to look at a moment when Netflix basically has built out this streaming model that's really successful. And everybody else said, hey, that sounds great. Why don't we just go do that? And then we don't have to give you our content anymore. And we can just basically make money off of the stuff that we've developed already. So all these other competitors basically built up Netflix. And now Netflix is challenged by these upstarts and has to figure out almost what's the next big thing. And the challenge for them is they've been basically innovating around the margins instead of finding that next big thing. So it's an interesting juxtaposition of that with the DVD moment.
Yeah. Nicole Sperling of the New York Times noting that at its peak, 2010, roughly 20 million folks subscribed to the DVD service from Netflix. And Sarah Krause of the Wall Street Journal pointing out that Netflix, you talked about a moment in time. So Netflix, they said they shipped over 5 billion discs. The first red envelope the company mailed in March 1998 was, did you see this?
Oh my God, I remember it and I forgot. What was it?
Beetlejuice. And the most popular DVD rented by mail was The Blind Side. 2009 sports drama, Sandra Bullock. Great film. Beetlejuice 2. It doesn't age so well, but it's still good.
September 23rd, last day to get a DVD. So I'm going to try to rent like 100 that day so I can be the last person in human history to ever get a DVD from Netflix.
Final thing I wanted to ask you, Jeremy, quick. Netflix is about live streaming. Netflix's second live streaming event, The Love is Blind cast reunion, didn't go well recently. There was some glitches. They had to put it out the next day as a recording as opposed to a live stream. The first one, however, the first live stream they did this year, Chris Rock's stand-up went swimmingly. Will live streaming catch on Netflix?
The short answer is kinda. but should it? That's the question. And ultimately, this is an area that Netflix is going to go into. They're going to build up some competency in this regard. The problem is that you know, this is obviously an area where a lot of other people are just stronger. You know, they've got the, like, for instance, you think about live sports. That's one of the number one things that people want to see live streamed. And that's not an area that Netflix is great at. But at the same time, they can't cede this area to every other player. So they're just going to go into it. They're going to get a little bit better at it, and they're not going to be a leader in this regard. It's not happening anytime soon.
Great points. That's what we've got time for the lead. Time, of course, for the halftime report. Jeremy, one takeaway from the first half, please, sir.
Netflix is really kind of optimizing right now. This is where they are in their life cycle as a company, as opposed to being the player that has the innovative, super amazing idea that Wall Street is looking at them for.
Mm-hmm. Netflix expects to make $8.2 billion in Q2. That would be 3% year-on-year growth. And for context, we talked about Netflix not doing so well, struggling a bit, but Netflix still the largest video streamer in the country, according to our estimates. 171 million US viewers. Prime Video has 157, so that's 14 million less. Hulu has 128, and everyone else has less than 100 million viewers to Netflix's 171. Time for the second half of the show. Today, in other news, Meta, TikTok, and YouTube prepare to face off at the 2023 NewFronts, and could instant videos represent the next leap in artificial intelligence? Story one. Daniel Konstantinovich, who we referenced earlier, he's on the briefings team, recently wrote that Meta, TikTok, and YouTube prepare to face off at the 2023 NewFronts, noting that at the 2023 IAB NewFronts going on right now, digital platforms are trying to woo advertisers who are cutting spending in the face of high interest rates, increased privacy regulation, and attribution issues across media, Daniel was writing. But Jeremy, the most interesting sentence in his article is what and why.
The most interesting sentence to me is short form video will likely dominate the NewFronts with TikTok, Meta, and YouTube all set to present. And I'm kind of cheating because, like you said, they're going on right now. So I know for a fact that there's a lot of conversation around that. YouTube presented yesterday, and then we've got later on in the week, there's going to be Meta and TikTok just 5 hours apart. I'm going to be there. I'm very excited. And there's just really a lot of conversation about placing ads against a type of content that really the mainstream media buying populace wasn't thinking about a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. He had a chart in his article I thought was really interesting. So with the possibility of a TikTok ban, advertisers having to consider where they would move their dollars to if it was banned. Where are those short form video dollars currently? In January, Cohen Research saying 75% of ad buyers say their largest clients are on TikTok, 75%, 67% on Instagram Reels, 43% on YouTube Shorts. Story two. Instant videos could represent the next leap in AI technology, writes Cade Metz of the New York Times. He explains that New York startup Runway AI is amongst a group of companies working on systems that can produce short videos in minutes based on a few words typed into a computer, like a cow at a birthday party. God knows why that's the video people are after, but it's in the article. Mr. Metz notes the videos are only 4 seconds long. The video is choppy and blurry if you look closely, and sometimes the images are weird, distorted, and disturbing. But Jeremy, the most interesting sentence in this article is what and why.
A bit of a cheat. It's kind of like a few short sentences. Will we allow it? Yes, we will. It's a quote. In the old days, to do anything remotely like this, you had to have a camera, you had to have props, you had to have a location, you had to have permission, you had to have money, said Susan Bonser, an author and a publisher. Now, you don't have to have any of that. You can just sit down and imagine it. And I think it's really obviously interesting the fact that generative AI is not just about text. Everybody kind of thinks about it that way. It's about AI generating stuff, for lack of a better term, stuff. Yeah. I'm being very technical here, but it's ultimately, you know, obviously going to be transformative. These are very early days, but just to get a little bit of a sense of these types of technologies gives you a bit of a idea of where they're going. And that's incredibly helpful for any marketer.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, Mr. Metz pointing out, the new video generation systems could speed the work of movie makers while becoming a new and quick way to create hard to detect online misinformation, making it even harder to tell what's real on the internet.
If this goes well, we might even get the rest of the Avatar movies before we die.
Perhaps. Well, yeah, one a century at the moment. The last one was too long. There, I said it. It just was. Still good. That's all we've got time for this episode. Thank you so much, Jeremy, for hanging out today.
Pleasure as always.
I didn't see it in 3D. That's why I'm angry.
Oh, that's a problem.
Yeah. It's my own fault. Thank you so much to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, and Stuart, who runs the team. Thanks to everyone listening into the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by InMobi. You can tune in tomorrow to hang out with Sarah Lieber, where she'll be speaking with analysts Karina Perkins and Yuri Wormser all about, you guessed it, generative AI, ChatGPT, and retail.